Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. Fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show, and a very special show it's going to be as I get to chat and interview my son Xander. What's up, Xander?
Hey, how's it going, Dad? It's good to be on the show.
It's great to have you on, and I thought it would be a great time. You know, you're going to be a college junior. And you're, you know, an athlete, but you've been through, and you're now yourself recognizing some of the economic things that happen. And I know you're studying econ in school, and, you know, I thought it'd be great just to kind of have a chat and, you know, let people know, you know, somebody from your age and your generation of what you're seeing. And I guess, you know, the first thing is, you know, what do you think about the school and the education that you're receiving and the way that everything is done there? What's your opinion of what's going on?
You know, it's really a great experience. I have to say, I really am loving college, you know, even more than I expected. You know, I was a big fan of high school. You know, there's nothing better than, you know, going to school, seeing your friends every day. It's really not too bad. But college is a whole different experience. And, you know, the classes I'm taking, you know, I've gotten to taken a lot of classes that really had nothing to do with my major. Economics, and it's interesting to see the different, you know, perspectives of life that I never thought I'd really get to approach. But, you know, as far as the economics classes go, you know, I've been very fortunate to come across some great professors and people who really love what they do, and, you know, I've learned a lot from them. I mean, learning in the classroom, I think, is a little bit different than the real world because you're really being taught out of a textbook. And, you know, the interesting thing is that you can't always apply a textbook theory to the real world. So I think it's really important. I mean, even working with you this summer, I've gotten to apply a lot of the theories that I've learned in school to some things that I've heard on the Business Channel. And I think it's really cool to, you know, kind of combine those ideas and see where, you know, the textbook theory kind of meets the real world application. So, you know, learning things in school is awesome, and I've been very fortunate to also have some teachers who have taught me some real-world things that, you know, I can use economic theory for, and so that's been a really great part of my learning experience at school.
So what are some of the key things you've learned? I mean, you know, I've talked about them before, but, you know, it's one of the big things that a lot of people don't pay attention is, you know, the opportunity costs and things like that. What are some of the key things you've learned in the economic world from out of the book and then had to put into practical experience?
Well, I think, you know, as an economics person, I mean, the first thing they teach you, basically any entry-level course is what supply and demand means. And I think that's a really important theory that can not only be applied to economics and, you know, the economic world, but, you know, basically anywhere you go, supply and demand is always at work. I mean, if you just think about it, you know, and there's people really want something, they're willing to pay more for it. And just that basic concept, I think, is something that kind of resonates throughout all economics, no matter how complex it might be or no matter how simple it may be. I mean, you can take that concept and I think build off that for the rest of economics. So that's one thing that I've really taken with me. You know, this past year I took a really interesting course called International Finance, where I got to learn basically how money flows in and out of the country through, you know, a multitude of different graphs and principles. And I thought that was probably the most interesting class I've taken so far in economics.
So when you look at, you know, your learning and then you tie it to practical experience, do you learn enough in the school or does it still take some real hard experience in the real world to really put the principles to use?
Yeah, you know, I think you really need to go beyond what you learn in school and try to apply things because, you know, I really think it's like, you know, learning for a test. Can you do it by yourself or do you need a teacher to go through it? I mean, it's a whole different animal, you know, understanding something when somebody's teaching it to you and then being able to reapply it on your own. So I think, you know, how I've been able to learn it through the classroom, not only that, but, you know, watching TV, on kind of business concept, you know, researching things online. I mean, I think you really need to go a little bit above and beyond to kind of connect what you learn in the classroom to the real world. So, I mean, what you learn in the classroom is great, but I think, you know, if you really want to get a full understanding, you need to go out into the real world and see how things work, you know, not only on a textbook scale, but, you know, on a real live scale.
So when you're looking right now, and of course, you know, you've had, you know, two pretty good jobs, the two summers you've been home, you know, working. I mean, actually, you had three pretty good jobs your last summer at home. You worked at the golf course, but, you know, I mean, you had a good internship last year doing compliance work for a company, and you got paid well. And then you had a good job this summer working for me and got paid well. But what do you look at? What do you think about? Does the supply, does or should the supply-demand model also play into working? In other words, you know, we have this big scuttlebutt about higher minimum wage. What's your view on the higher minimum wage debate? And you think it should be the same model as everything else, and it should be more on supply and demand versus a guaranteed wage?
Yeah, well, you know, I do think it should be more based on supply and demand. You know, just learning both types of economics, I was very lucky in high school to learn that there is really two kind of drastically different approaches to economics. I'm sure you've taught me a little bit about them too, Keynesian economics and Austrian economics, and they kind of focus on different principles while using the same ones, but, you know, they both focus a lot on supply and demand, but, you know, one kind of focuses more on having the more government involvement, while the other kind of focuses on free market forces that really determine the outcome of prices. And one thing I really noticed with the minimum wage laws is that, you know, it was kind of an instance of the government kind of coming in and setting a price floor, or maybe that wasn't the best thing for the market, and has, you know, will eventually have some outcomes that might not be in the best interest of the economy. I mean, if you look at it, you know, like you've said on TV before, you know, a little store that is corporately owned, you know, will have to pay, you know, $250,000 more dollars a year in wage dollars, you know, if they were to raise the minimum wage to such a drastic hike. So stuff like that, I think, in the end, is really not good for the economy. And I think, you know, people who are very advocate on, you know, so to say a $15 minimum wage, you know, could take a step back and look at a simple lesson in economics and see where that could eventually propel us in the future and not be such a good thing for the economy because of eventually what that will do to a business and how it runs. I mean, I think supply and demand is a great concept and really emphasizes, I think, the private market. I mean, labor, you know, I feel like should be determined by, you know, the supply and demand of labor itself. And, you know, while I definitely was encouraged to have a higher minimum wage, but I think when they were jumping up to 15, I think that kind of threw, you know, the market for a spin and really wasn't good. It will not be good for the economy in the long run.
Yeah, and of course, I'm a big fan of that. I think that it's a ridiculous idea. And of course, you and I both know that when it comes to spending money, that the big companies are going to find ways to automate. And if they have to pay $15, they're going to pay less people because most companies, especially small businesses, cannot afford to pay more payroll. And they're going to have to find a way to automate because they won't be able to succeed. And, it, you know, it's a simple example that I've used, but I'll use it with you as we get ready to come up here to a break. But the simple example I use is McDonald's, a pretty successful franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you figure out, you know, we got McDonald's by our house and there's, you know, they're open like 24 hours a day. And usually every time I go there, there's about five employees in the smaller McDonald's. So you've got a total man hours of 168 hours a week. So if you multiply that by just simply the $5 raise, okay, you know, all of a sudden you've got a $168 times five. Okay, and now you've got, you know, and multiply that times 52, and all of a sudden you've got, where is the employer going to come up with that extra money? So it doesn't make sense. It's going to be forced to be dealt with, and it will create, in my opinion, more unemployment than employment. And of course, our entire jobs picture kind of sucks now anyways, but that's kind of what it is. We're going to step out here for a break. I'm working today with my son, Xander Horowitz, student at Illinois Wesleyan and an athlete, and we want you to make sure we both use Thinkorswim, and we want to make sure you check out Thinkorswim on Wednesday. They've got the option strategy, and it's one of their webinars, and they do them every day on their swim lessons and the Take the Plunge, so make sure you check them out. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'll be right back after break with Xander and me. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you right back after break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my boy. His last few days around the neighborhood, and be back at school and back to working out and playing baseball and going to school. So you looking forward to going back to school?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Summer's been a good time, but, you know, as college has progressed throughout the past couple of years, you know, I found it to kind of be like a second home. And when you're away from one for too long, you kind of start to miss it a little bit. So I've enjoyed the summer. Definitely I've had a good time, but I'm definitely ready to go back and get started with basically what seems like a completely different way of life for the next 9 months.
So tell your audience, how much school, how much partying were you down there?
You know, there's a good amount of school, but I think the great thing about going to college is it's kind of a precursor to adulthood. I mean, you're not in high school anymore. You're not living at home for most of the year. So it's kind of like a mini step in between being in the real world and, you know, being a student, a younger student in high school or middle school. You know, you get to live on your own. You get to do a lot of things. There's really nobody there telling you what you need to do. But, you know, it's kind of knowing what's expected of you, and I think that's what I really like about it. I mean, I'm not completely on my own yet with expenses and everything, but I think it's great that, you know, there's nobody telling you to wake up, go to school. It's kind of on you, and there's so many things that you can do in college and so many things that you can be a part of no matter what things in life you enjoy. I mean, I happen to be a big sports fan. I like to play baseball, so I'm part of the baseball team there. You know, I am in a fraternity there. I've met a lot of great guys doing that. But there's so many great things you can do really at any school, and I think it's really cool the way that college works with you kind of being on your own.
And I agree, and I think that's a great step to adulthood, and you've done, from my standpoint, you've done a good job, because obviously the grades are good, so I can only base it on that. So when you look at it at school, and of course you work a little bit during the school year as well, but what is a guy like you, okay, you know, you've obviously lived you grew up in a decent home, and, you know, we grew up in a fairly affluent area, and you haven't seen a lot of the, you know, depressed areas of the world, but, you know, you see more of it, and the more you're out, the more you see. What are you seeing now in the overall economy from your standpoint? You know, does it bother you at some of the prices that you have to pay? Do you follow any of that kind of stuff? Does it give you some cause for concern?
Well, you know what, to be honest, I think as a kid in my shoes, you know, I don't think my life has really been affected that much in the past 8 years by what's happening in the economy. I actually had a big argument my freshman year with a couple buddies. You know, they were talking about, you know, the economic recession. It was in pretty full force then. That was about 5 years ago. You know, and growing up in Deerfield, which is, you know, a pretty affluent community, I have to agree with you. I haven't really seen much in the world that would make me think that this world is such a bad place. And, you know, we were kind of arguing back and forth about whether our lives had been affected or not by the recession. And I said, honestly, you know, I've done everything that I've wanted to do. You know, I kept playing baseball. I still had my iPhone. I still had an Xbox. You know, I had everything that I had ever wanted. And, you know, growing up, you know, 5 years after that, I think it's interesting to take a different look on life. And going to college, you know, I've gotten to see people from, you know, a wider variety of a spectrum, you know, rather than just being from Deerfield High School. And I think the older you get, you know, the more you learn. And I think this saying is true that, you know, the more you know, the more you don't know. And I think every day, you know, whether it be at school or at home, you kind of get to notice things and you see things that maybe you didn't see before. And I think that, you know, going to school in Bloomington, Illinois, which is probably, you know, not as, I would say, as rich of an area or as affluent of a community as where I'm used to from back home, you know, I've gotten to see a lot of interesting things. And, you know, I think it's opened my doors a little bit and made me, you know, that much more knowledgeful about, you know, my situation as well as other people's situations.
So, you know, now when you go out, you know, shopping by yourself, now, of course, when you're at home, you know, you never looked at the price of anything. You just, you know, I want it and you bought it. And that's it. But now when you're out and you're kind of budgeted, right? I mean, the reason you work in the summer so you can, you know, kind of get through school and, you know, we kind of have a deal, you know, you're on your own, you know, for your party money or, you know, your whatever you need to do. You know, I cover your tuition and you know, the meal plan. But other than that, you're basically on your own, and I don't supply that. Do you find yourself shopping a little bit differently when you're out there looking at stuff? Do you get the cheaper beer, or do you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, most definitely. That's a great point. I mean, every time I go out, you know, I kind of think to myself, you know, I worked this summer, I accumulated, you know, this X amount of money, you know, I have approximately this much I can spend, you know, per month or, you know, at one time that I'd be comfortable with. And it's really interesting at this age now, you know, you actually do think about it, you know, and I go, even when I go to Walgreens, you know, maybe get a few things for the room, you know, I'm always looking for, you know, stuff around the cheaper end, you know, that I could, you know, spend money and not, you know, have a nervous breakdown after that I spent too much. So it's definitely interesting. And even like you said about the beer, you know, I'm not going out and buying, you know, the most expensive beer every night because it's just not really feasible on my budget. You know, I have X amount of dollars for the year. I work a little bit at school, but you know, basically I'm living, you know, a little bit differently than I have in the past because I do have to keep track of things, and I kind of like that. I mean, I think it's interesting when, you know, you have to live life and be more aware of what you're doing than just going out and doing anything that you want. Because, you know, for a lot of people, you know, in real life, you really have to budget. I mean, not everybody is in the top 1% of America making, you know, millions and millions of dollars a year. So, you know, making a budget is really important. And I found myself kind of subconsciously, you know, adhering to that principle in this past couple of years.
So, and again, so making a budget, and you know, this is something you have to learn at your age, that you've learned and you've done very well with it. And now, isn't it important for everybody, in your opinion, to have a budget? Because you know, no matter how much you make, you have to always, you know, the inflow versus the outflow, you know, there should be an equilibrium and there should be more coming in than going out. Of course, that's one of the problems in America, is that we tend to overspend more than we make. But how important is that to you, and how important do you think it should be for the average person and basically everybody?
I think it's really important. I mean, I think you're getting at the example of our government right now, spending massive amounts of money, way more than they're taking in. I think, you know, maybe it doesn't affect us today at this exact moment, but down the line, you know, it's going to have a huge effect, that, and it might do something, I think, to this country that nobody could really see coming. I mean, from my perspective, you know, I spend a little bit too much money. I'll have to cut back. But I know it's not a life or death situation. I know it'll always have my parents there if I got into a little bit of trouble. But, you know, when you get out into the real world and, you know, start living, you really do need to keep track of stuff, because, you know, when you spend more than you make, you end up getting in a lot of trouble. And I think, you know, making a budget, and the most important thing about anything is sticking to it. I mean, when you have a plan, you got to stick to it. And I think that's something that we're seeing a little bit of a problem right now in our country.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about it in the next segment, but I think it's important, you know, the lessons that you've learned, you know, since you've been away is, you know, like when you were home, you know, wherever we went, you know, I just, you know, we'd go out to dinner, I pay, you know, now I'm not there, so I'm not paying, right? So you've got to, you know, budget yourself, and you've learned to manage your own time, which people deal with trouble that their entire life. And then manage to deal with your own budget, because again, you know you're away and you're having a good time, and you know, but you can't drink yourself or party yourself or spend yourself out of your budget. You know, you can't be going out for filet mignon dinners every night, because again, you have to, you know, watch the spending. And I think that's an important lesson, and I think that lesson goes no matter who you are or no matter how old you are. I think that you have to watch the outflow. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you always have to be watching what you're doing and keeping conscious track of, you know, what you have and what you don't have. And I think you see it in all walks of life. I mean, sometimes you hear about professional sports players going bankrupt, and a lot of people, you know, think, you know, how can you lose millions and millions of dollars? And, you know, really, it just goes back to the same principle. I mean, if you have any amount of money, you can always overspend no matter how much you have. So I think it's important for, you know, anybody in any walk of life to have a good plan.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, again, that's something we talk about a lot. It's, you know, it goes to trading, and which we're going to talk a little bit about trading when we come back. But it goes for life, and everything you do, you should be somewhat planned, because you have to, you know, when you least expect it, and I know you learned this in economics, when you least expect it, expect it, okay? Because you never know what dark lies behind the door when there's going to be a problem that you have to be prepared for. Anyways, this is the Bubba Show. I am with Xander Horwitz, my son, and as he gets ready to pack up and go back to school, I wanted to get him on air and let you hear the views of a younger person that is just getting started out in the world. And make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim. Xander and I both use Thinkorswim. Certainly Xander uses it partly because that's what I taught him on, but also because I think he finds it easy to use. Right, son? You like it? You think it's easy to use as well?
Yes, I love the Thinkorswim platform.
So this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We're going to step out of here for a break, and we're going to come back with a little bit more from my boy Xander. And this is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll be right back after the break. How about you?
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare. But for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call. And I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare. Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the wake of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz, and I am with my son, Xander Horwitz, a student at Illinois Wesleyan University. So, Xander, as you get ready and you're going back to school now, and, you know, obviously we have some hot spots going on, and, of course, because you check all my media and you watch a lot, and what are you thinking about, for example, why don't we start with, you know, the Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, this whole election mess? You know, not that who's running yet, but do you have any thought as to why it starts like 2 years before the race is going to even be run? I mean, do you give any thought to that?
You know, I actually have given a little bit of thought to that, and it actually started in high school. You know, I asked my economics teacher, you know, what was the point of spending millions and millions of dollars to get your opinion out there, to get elected? Just in my view as a young kid, I thought, with all the problems in this country, you know, that money could be spent doing something better than just trying to push a message out there to get elected. Never really made much sense to me, and it still doesn't to this day. I mean, starting a year and a half before, you know, any of these people will even be elected, and spending just an ungodly amount of money on what seems to me is, you know, it's important, but I think, you know, money is not what should convey your message to the rest of the people. I think it should be the message itself. And, you know, I've always thought that that system, that part of our political system was a little flawed. So, I mean, that's just my view on it.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree with that completely. Now, do you have any views on the way the setup? Like, did you happen to catch any of the debate at all? I don't know if you did or you didn't.
I did catch a little bit of the debate, about 10 minutes of it, and not too much. I heard Donald Trump speak a lot in those 10 minutes.
he likes to speak a lot. He is a speaker. And you have any opinion towards Donald Trump and A, what he's said and what he's done and what he represents?
Well, a couple months ago, you know, I heard him start talking about running for the presidency. And to be honest, a lot of the stuff that he was talking about kind of resonated with me. And I think that had a lot to do with him not talking to me as a politician, but kind of more just a regular guy who happens to be a billionaire. I mean, I was listening, obviously, we had the Fox Business Channel on all day. So all the, you know, the GOP news and rumors, they're always spreading around. And Donald Trump, although he may be kind of crazy and seem kind of outlandish at times, a lot of what he was saying kind of made sense to me because, you know, he simplified it down. He didn't talk, you know, as he was trying to talk around an issue. He says what's on his mind. And, you know, I really kind of like that. So, I mean, I don't really have somebody who I clear-cut think I'm going to vote for yet. But, you know, a lot of what Donald Trump has said about, you know, some issues, although I don't agree with all of them, it was really interesting for me to see him talk to me as, you know, like a person and not talk around the issue like a lot of politicians do and not have political speak, as I think it's called today. So I really liked Donald Trump, the start of his campaign, because it was different and it wasn't like anything I'd ever seen before.
So now, do you have any thoughts on the current setup or the current administration? Do you have any thoughts there? And if you don't, it's okay. I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't have many thoughts, but I do have like one main thought of the overall political system in our country. I honestly think it's a little bit flawed. I think people spend so much time, you know, on the other side, on both sides of the fence, kind of yelling at each other. When I think people kind of forget sometimes that this is one country, this is, you know, the United States of America. It's not, you know, the Democrats and Republicans. I mean, you know, those are the political parties that usually end up running against each other in the presidential election. But I think sometimes people lose sight of the fact that we are one nation and that, you know, we strive to do things together. And I think politics a lot of times get lost in the issues that divide the two parties instead of unite them. And that's one thing that's really bothered me. You know, over the past couple of years, I've become a lot more attuned to what's going on in the political world. And it kind of, you know, makes me a little bit upset that so much of the effort is focused on disagreeing with one another when there's not really, you know, a push towards a solution. And I think that's one thing that I hope changes over the course of my lifetime. I mean, I think it's going to have to change somewhat soon, you know, if this country is going to become prosperous once again.
You mean one nation under God, indivisible, for justice and liberty for all? You mean that?
That's what we said in school.
Yeah, well, I mean, and of course, I do agree with that, and it saddens me as an older person that we do spend so much time in every election, basically. You know, everything that every vote that comes up in either the House or the Senate or, you know, whatever, always goes straight down party lines. When, you know, that to me, that was not what the original framers, that's not what we fought the Revolutionary War for, the way I understand it. So what do you think? I mean, is this what the framers of the Constitution had in mind, is the jumbled mess that we see now?
No, I don't think it's what they had in mind. I just think, you know, I don't even really know how it started. There started to be such a divide, but I'm okay with a divide up until a certain point. But I think it's just sometimes people lose, I think they just lose sight of what, you know, the most important things are, and they just, you know, want to try to get their party in power so they can do what they want. But I think there's so much energy, so much negative energy spent on doing things that really aren't, you know, aren't that important, and I'd really like to see that change.
And I'll say in my way, they spend a lot of money, a lot of our money, to be not productive and waste time, and yet they continue to be rewarded for crap, for a crappy job. I mean, that's how I see it. And, you know, I've been on record, you know, is that I'm going to try to run for president, but also the fact that, you know, I think that it's both sides of the aisle, okay, are corrupt, and they're beaten down, and they're basically, in my opinion, strictly in it for the money only, and have no care about running it like a business. I don't see this running like a business. Now, what, do you see it as a business, or do you see it as just government getting too big? And I know that's part of the thing you studied in school as well.
Well, I do think America, I mean, I do think it is kind of a business, and also kind of some other things too, some abstract things. You know, being a country, I don't think it's all about money, but I think the way that, you know, the growth of our government, I think over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years has been a little bit extreme. And from my point of view, you know, what I learned about economics is I'm more of a fan of free market kind of capitalism, the idea that, you know, markets really make an economy work. And when the government, you know, tries to interfere too much with that, then things stop working as well. And I think we've seen that over the past few years, trying to get out of this recession that we really are kind of still stuck in. I think, you know, the government is trying to force things too much instead of just letting them happen. I mean, I think it's been 8 years now since, you know, the big housing market crash, and the economy still really hasn't come around the way a lot of people thought it would. And I think that has, you know, a lot to do with the government just trying to do too much instead of just letting the country run, I think, the way that it originally came to its best at, and that was by letting kind of the free market decide, you know, how things should work and what, you know, how things should run in this country.
Now, you would be a good person to ask this question to, because of your youth and because of what you know and what you don't know. Should the banks, in your opinion, and again, there's no right or wrong answer, should the banks have been bailed out by the Federal Reserve in 2008? Were they or are they too big to fail? What's your opinion and what's your take?
I really don't have enough background to say whether they should or should not have been bailed out. I think that, you know, one of the worst things that can happen to an economy is the financial system breaking down. I think that's when things really get thrown out of control. So the bailout, although it seems like banks are terrible and evil now, I really don't know if they should not have been bailed out. I mean, I think, you know, like I said, when the financial system breaks down, I think everything kind of breaks down after that. So I don't know if the government was right or wrong to do that. But, you know, looking back at it 8 years after, I feel like, you know, a bank would come up during those times and, you know, the most successful one without any help would have still been here today. So I'd have to lean towards them not being bailed out because, you know, that's just an example of government stepping in and trying to make things work the way they really aren't supposed to work. And, you know, we find ourselves a long time later, you're still struggling as an economy.
Yeah, and of course, and that's always been one of my contentions. And I'm the truth is both cases have been made to me, and I'm still got the fence pole stuck, you know where, because I really can't make up my mind. But I'm certainly not happy 5 years later, or what the hell, it's 7 years now, with what transpired, because there's been too much damage done by people that go back to what you opened up and we talked about in the first second, that they don't have business knowledge, they have book knowledge, but they haven't had the ability to translate that knowledge from a textbook to a real job, where so far you have been able to make that change because you've had a couple of good jobs and you've learned how to work out and work through that. But unfortunately, I think our leaders have not learned that yet. And I think that becomes a bigger problem, you know, as we look at it. But we'll get more of that on the other side of the break. This is the Bubba Show. I'm with my son, Xander Horowitz, today. We're reminiscing and talking a little bit before he goes back, excuse me, to school. I want to remind you that the Bubba Report is out, and I think that that's a very valuable tool for all of you. I think it's the best $99 you'll spend in a year on anything to do with trading or investing. We really give you some keen insight, and of course, we've been told that we write about things long before they happen to give you a better view of the overall economy as well, and make sure as well to make sure if you want to get the Bubba Show on demand, you go to libertytalk.fm. The Bubba Show plays there every day at your convenience, at your time, whenever you want. You can pick it up and listen on your free time. But this is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I am with Xander Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org, and we'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. With my son, Xander, actually it's Alexander, but as Xander, he goes by like Madonna, Xander Horowitz. And so Xander, you know, you've been trading, you know, on and off for almost 5 years now. Jeez, that's a long time. What do you think? How do you like it? And how much of the Wall Street Journal or CNBC or Fox you put into your trading?
You know, I have to say, I really enjoy trading. I think it's interesting. It's kind of, more or less for me, I think it's kind of like a game. I mean, you have a strategy, you have, I consider the players, which are the charts, and you kind of just get to read the game, and it just goes back and forth all the time, and you set your certain levels, you get in when you want, you get out when you want, and I think the great thing about trading is there's no one way to do it. I know I was taught how to do it a certain way, and I really like the way that it's worked for me so far. But, you know, like a lot of things in life, you know, there's not one answer to it. And I think you hear a lot of people, a lot of powerful people, often have differing opinions on, you know, what's going on in the stock market. And I think that's one of the coolest things about it, is there's no right or wrong answer all the time. It's just how you interpret it. And I found that really interesting so far.
And now, how much does the day-to-day news that you may hear me talk about, or you may see yourself, or you might, you know, you might be reading on your phone, how much does that influence the next trade you're going to make?
It really has little effect on what trades I'm going to make. I mean, obviously, listening to you and listening to the Business Channel every day, like, I realize what's going on in the economy right now in the stock market. You know, a lot of people say it's going to crash when rates rise, and, you know, I do definitely see some truth in that. I can see how the stock market is definitely overvalued right now. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, especially with individual stocks, I really don't care or bother to look up or worry or hear about anything going on. You know, for me, I just like to look at the chart, and I like to let the chart do the talking. I mean, I think that's when I've been my most successful, is when I kind of just look at something and don't even bother to look at the name. You know, I look at the levels, and, you know, over time, when I've stuck to that principle, I've been successful. I've also had some times where I've gotten a little bit out of that. You know, of course, like any other person, I hear things and I try to implement them, and usually that doesn't end up working out for me with trading. So I found that sticking to those principles that I learned when I first started trading and knew nothing about really the stock market and the economy, I think those times have carried over and been the times when I've been most successful.
Well, yeah, and of course, that, you know, as I freely admit, you know, most of the bad trades I made in my life were because I decided that my opinion was more valuable than what I was actually seeing. But I think it's interesting that you compared it to a game, and you're a pretty good game player. I mean, you learned all the bad habits from me, how to play poker, how to play gin and games. But, you know, I use, when I talk to people and I teach and I talk about it, I say it's just like a game. It's a game of mathematics, like poker, gin. You don't play backgammon yet, but poker, gin, backgammon, and bridge, which are all games that are based on mathematics and logic. Would you agree with that principle?
Yeah, I would agree with that principle, and I think a really important concept to point out, with those games like trading, you know, you're not going to win every single time, and I think that's really important for people to learn that, you know, you may be the better player, you may, you know, see something the right way, and it may not always work out. And I think the important thing to realize is, with games like that, and especially the one that's the stock market, I think the better player over time, or the player who stays most consistent to the right principles, is going to be successful over time. So I've had some experiences with losing trades, and, you know, I've had many, and it's kind of discouraging. But what I found is that when I stuck to my principles over time, you know, I've made a little bit of money because I was able to play the game and keep doing it the right way.
So let's go back in time to yesteryear, a couple of bad trades that you made. And, you know, I remember them, but again, we've all made them. But the reason I'm going is because now, you know, earlier today you mentioned, you know, the opportunity cost. So now you see, right, that if you get involved and you make a bad trade, not because it was a loser, you know, bad trade is not just as a loser. A bad trade is a trade you made for the wrong reasons and not using the proper module or the model that we like to believe in, which is probability. And, you know, you got stuck. So what happens is, if you get into a bad trade, what does it do to you? It ruins your emotion, and then it takes away opportunity costs of making the next trade. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, when you let your emotion kind of get the best of you in any situation in life, it usually doesn't work out, because you make some decisions that you wouldn't normally make, and you kind of start thinking with your emotions instead of your mind, and it doesn't work out for the best, I don't think.
Well, and again, I agree with that, and I think it's important, and that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, I always want to make sure, because, I taught you how to play pool. You know, we played pool for money when you were about six. So, you know, but I mean, no, I mean, it's serious, though. But in all kidding aside, it is, I think it's one of the most valuable factors, because basically, until this year, did you ever watch a Business Channel until this year, other than if I was on it, I said, hey, you got to watch this show?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so you didn't know what half these companies are, other than you know what Apple is, because Apple is the phone you use. But I mean, you know, did you know half the companies you trade and what you traded? Did you know, have any idea what they were or what they did?
No, I knew nothing. I knew that they were on my list, and I knew that they had a chart that I could look at, and that was really all that I needed.
And how did you get it to your list?
No, a couple concepts I learned from you. You know, I use the search engine. You know, I mean, there's a few of them out there, Finviz, Yahoo, and basically had a couple criteria that I looked for, you know, stocks that were in a certain price range and stocks that had at least a certain amount of volume, you know, that were liquid. And I just kind of ticked off the list, and, you know, that was that.
Yeah, because I remember when the first trade you made, I'd never heard of the company either, but it turned out to be a big winner. But so when you go to school, this becomes a fairly simple, logical way for you to also make extra money, does it not? Because now you don't have to, you're not watching at every moment your phone to see what's being said about that company, or you're not watching CNBC or reading the Wall Street Journal. You're just simply looking at a chart, identifying a trade and making it and letting it play out. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I mean, even this summer, I remember coming in on Monday mornings, and I'd sit and I'd look at a few charts, you know, 20 or 30 minutes, and I'd make some trades and kind of just let them play out during the week, and I barely even looked at them because there's nothing. I'd made the trade. I'd made what I thought was the right play, and I let it play out the way that I was taught, and I didn't try to bring in other things that would make me make my decision-making, you know, not to its best ability.
So if somebody out there was just deciding that they were going to start to trade and had never traded before, I mean, I think everybody's done a little bit of investing because I think it's just natural through business and work you do, you know, your IRA and your 401k. But if somebody was going to say, you know what, I want to try to trade, if you were to give them a couple of things, a couple of pointers, what would be the first things you would tell somebody that was going to start trading?
You know, I think the first thing is you got to realize how much money that you're working with, and you want to keep it consistent. I think one of the main problems that even I went through a little bit as a young trader was, you know, I make a couple bad trades and I try to put a little more money into the next trade to make up for it. I think that's one of the worst things that you can do because in the end it's kind of like a spiral downward, and it just really affects not only your mental state, but it just affects everything badly. And I think, you know, like we said about the budget before, life is about being consistent and sticking to a plan once you make it. I mean, you can't just duck out once one thing goes wrong because you're always going to be searching for that, you know, next big thing that really isn't there. You know, the same plan is still there to work for you if you let it work for itself.
And anything else? Any other words of wisdom for the new trader out there?
Yeah, you know, I think this is one thing you actually taught me one of my first days trading. The concept of trading with a butcher knife and not a scalpel. I think it's a really interesting analogy because, you know, a couple times when I've been trading, I'm looking for like something down to the penny, and I take a step back and think, you know, this isn't an exact science. This isn't a game that is measured, you know, in pennies, you know, down to the exact cent. I mean, I think, you know, basically you want to take a look at something and see it for what it is. I mean, if you take things down to the penny, down to the micro cent, you know, I don't think you're ever going to end up making a trade. You're just not going to find yourself being successful. So I think, you know, you want to look at things, but not too deeply. I mean, don't look into something for 3 hours and, you know, see if you found the magic bullet. I think you want to, you know, look at something, stick to what you've been taught, and just perform it the way that you know how, and don't take things too seriously, or you know, but you know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely, don't take it too seriously, and make sure you just follow the rules. Well, Xander, I'm going to miss you. I know you're going back to school, but it's been great to have you on air. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
Yeah, you know, this was great. I mean, being on the Sporting Edge a lot, it's a little bit different coming on the Bubba Show, but I definitely enjoyed it, and I hope to be back soon.
Well, we'll always have you on. You always got an open time slot for you. This has been the Bubba Show. I was with my man, my boy, Xander Horowitz. I hope you enjoyed our presentation today. It was always fun, and I always like to share things of real life to everybody because that's what I believe in real life. This has been The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out TheBubbaShow.org, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, The Bubba Show. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much. I got a feeling.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.